I get emails from Coinbase all the time. XYZ garbage token is a top mover today. You guys are lost on what really matters here. Coinbase specifically running majority of those ETF funds. I see that as a huge honeypot. There's far more Bitcoin in ETFs than there are in the Lightning Network.
The fact that they only have like 2,000 Bitcoin on their balance sheet.
But as long as altcoins do exist, they're kind of like leeches on Bitcoin's success. And the stablecoin success is showing you that the dollar's not done. I don't think volatility goes away. I think we have cycles. So protect yourselves. Maybe sell Bitcoin. If we make this move, you're probably saving tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, just from a tax perspective. How do I orange pill this hospital, that church, this school?
What are some of the biggest mistakes that people make?
Oh, geez.
This rip of TFTC was brought to you by River. It's the best place to buy Bitcoin. Go to river.com/TFTC and enjoy this episode.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Jesse, welcome to the studio, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How's your day? How's your week been? You got Terry Black's last night? You saw me there?
I didn't see you. Phil saw you.
Oh, Phil saw me?
Yeah, and he told me he saw you. So it's good enough.
The move at Terry Black's, if you don't want to wait in line and you're in Austin, Texas, and you want some barbecue, you get takeout. You order ahead. It takes about 30 minutes to an hour.
Call it in.
Then you skip the long line. And you pick it up and you go eat it at your house. You can't eat it there, so you don't get that experience. But
how's it compared to Franklin's? I haven't had that one yet.
I haven't had Franklin's either yet, okay. So I can't talk. Right. I'm a one track mind. As soon as I find my spot, I anchor to it. I have two spots here: Cooper's down on Congress, and then Terry Black's. My wife was craving Terry Black's last night, so we ordered it.
Okay, keep her happy.
Got to keep her happy. Is that how you would describe your job at Sound Advisory, keeping people happy?
It's a big part of it, yeah. So jumping into that, I guess, I lead Sound Advisory, and we do financial planning for Bitcoiners. So, yeah, people want their financial plans secure and prosperous. So happiness, big component of that.
Well, before we get into like the nitty-gritty of what Sound Advisory does, I think zooming out at the RIA space more generally and historically, I mean, very short history, but how it's treated Bitcoin,
yeah,
and why something like Sound Advisory that is dedicated to Bitcoin needs to exist in the first place. What are some of the hurdles that individuals run into with RIAs when they go to them and they're like, hey, I'd like some Bitcoin exposure. And alternatively, what are the hurdles the RIAs that would like to do that run into that may not be able to?
Yeah. So a bit of my history in a prior life, I was a regular traditional financial advisor. Over a decade ago, started in that and then gradually became disillusioned with the gaps there and was on the doorstep of partnership at this firm and they weren't seeing Bitcoin and ended up just leaving that would-be partner at the altar and making a jump. So,
and that's a big jump.
Yeah.
Partner is the holy grail.
Yeah. That's it's like business married kind of. Mm-hmm. So left that, started my own thing. And I was like, I got to give this Bitcoin thing a try. And so I started my own RIA and then worked at Unchained as well. Like, hey, I want to get into the Bitcoin side of things. So worked at Unchained on their technical teams as well as the retirement and inheritance products. And through enough of those client conversations, we saw a gap, right? Because you hear it on lots of podcasts. This is not financial advice, you know. Go talk to your guy. Mm-hmm. And then the big problem you're alluding to is the guys that you should be talking to don't know anything, you know, about Bitcoin generally, like macroeconomically, or you pull on that a little further, things like key control. What are the best ways to get exposure? Like, how are you going to assist someone with, in many cases, it's the majority asset from a net worth perspective in their life. So our average sound advisory client has over $1 million in Bitcoin. They're typically already using like multi-sig key control when they come in the door, and they're just looking for things like tax planning or, hey, if something happens to me, how's my wife going to be okay? How are my kids going to be okay? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So rounding out the Bitcoin picture with financial advice, that's why we launched Sound Advisory. So disclaimer there that it is 100% owned by Unchained Capital Inc., but separately regulated companies. So Unchained does not give financial advice. Sound Advisory can.
Yeah. And when it comes to an RIA giving financial advice around Bitcoin, what does that advice typically sound like?
It varies from person to person, really situation to situation. In the same day, I can be telling someone to buy Bitcoin, very next call, oh, yeah, you should probably sell some Bitcoin for that reason, you know, because they're approaching just a different set of circumstances. So we have clients in their 30s, running a business, tiger by the tail, all the way up to 82, you know, the dementia, some end of life is starting to kick in, and they're just thinking through their situation differently. So having a good understanding of Bitcoin as a tool lets you take that tool into really like view the client through their own shoes, right? Like I'm gonna get into your situation and figure out, well, how would I help, you know, give advice if I were in your situation? And Bitcoin can look different depending on where you're at.
Yeah. And what do you like? Do you think there's gonna be like everything that's happened this year? ETFs launched. Seems like the Trump administration is pretty dead set on supporting the industry and basically giving it the green light. We're comfortable with this. Very stark difference from when he was actually president in his first administration. MicroStrategy is obviously changing the game in terms of Bitcoin as a corporate treasury asset. Mm-hmm. And we're beginning to see tag-alongs to that strategy in public equity markets. And so between the ETFs, spot Bitcoin, equities, proxy exposure with companies like MicroStrategy, it seems like Bitcoin is part of a portfolio.
It's becoming more reasonable.
More right? reasonable.
Yeah.
Are RIAs the world that you came from? Like the big, like the Ameriprises, the big warehouses that Morgan Stanley even, are they beginning to wake up to this?
Beginning. Mm-hmm. I think that's the key word, is that it wasn't there. And part of that is fee models are just kind of broken, right? Typical advisor charges an assets under management model where they charge 1% on whatever they can stick in the portfolio. So if they can't stick it in the portfolio, how do they charge 1%? They're incentivized not to learn about it. So real estate often doesn't end up in a portfolio. Gold doesn't, Bitcoin doesn't. But now Bitcoin can because of the ETF. And so like, oh, hey, I can still get my 1%, whatever, sell some Apple, buy some IBIT, buy some FBTC, right? That they can still get their 1%. And so now fees are a little more aligned, but they're just going to take that Wall Street layer too, right? That's as deep as they're going to go. So they're going to learn about the ETF because that's what they can stick in the account. So beginning, right? Everyone starts at a certain point. But it's encouraging to see it being treated more reasonably on a big stage. So,
but even so, like, do you think we're still far away from traditional RIAs allowing their clients to hold keys?
Hold keys? Yeah, it's harder to. There's some sort of rhyme there, you know, fees and the keys like that. If I let the client hold the keys, how am I going to get fees from that? Mm-hmm. Right. So aligning those incentives. We saw that pretty early on in Sound Advisory. So the structure was, hey, let's just charge a flat monthly fee, right? Doesn't matter. You keep your keys, you run multi-sig, you do whatever you need to do. It's just a flat monthly cost. So we don't do the AUM model unless it really makes sense for a client.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Bitcoin, the asset's going to disrupt wealth management more generally?
Yeah, it should. If we're right about, you know, if it's truly a tool that no one's in control of and it honors its promises, then it's going to shake up a lot of the lies that exist in the existing system.
What are some of the lies, in your opinion?
That the dollar is reliable, you know, the best currency in the world. Processes a lot of trade currently, but it's not reliable from a store value standpoint. I mean, listeners of your show have known this for years. So.
Well, that, but like also like the proxy dollar exposure in a lot of portfolios is treasuries, yeah. Right? And like how at risk is the traditional 60-40 portfolio because of Bitcoin?
From an inflation adjusted standpoint, it's pretty at risk, right? It's that 40 on the bond side, like they're not going to hold purchasing power over any reasonably long time period. And so, yeah, you have a, you know, of your $1 million portfolio, you got 400K in the bond side. Like you'd likely get those treasuries back, but what's 400K going to buy you in 10 years?
Yeah.
Not as much as it does today. So,
yeah. Do you have like numbers behind this? Like
Bitcoin going up and. Over any 10-year period?
Well, like, yeah. Yeah, like, how much money, like, in real terms, right? Because are people losing over that 10-year period if you compound the interest?
Depends how much they print.
Yeah.
Right? Historically, you know, you could dig up those numbers. I don't have them memorized, but, yeah, 10-year chunk of inflation. And people live, you know, even if you're retiring today, you're probably live through, like, 2-3 10-year chunks, right? You mm-hmm. make it to 80, 90 years old, 60 today. Like, just because you're retiring doesn't mean like, oh, I don't have to worry about inflation. I'm retired. I got to get set. Like, you typically have to grow assets through retirement to keep up with just life, the cost of life going up. So, yeah Bitcoin's, in my opinion, the clear winner historically and has the best prospects going forward to do that job.
You think we can keep this up?
Yeah.
50% CAGR. Ooh. 65, 50% CAGR, whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
With the volatility. Mm-hmm. Right. So 50% CAGR with a 80 vol. It's a beast. I have several clients retiring this year, and we look at, well, how do you stay retired, right? We don't want to go, these clients don't have a goal to go back to work. And if cycles continue, you want to ride 70, 80% down again. So it becomes a discussion. How do you balance this? Because you might have the 50% CAGR, but you might have the 80 vol associated with that. Both those might compress, you know. I think as adoption grows and if Bitcoin is money, then in a future state, it should be stable. Like you can imagine very little volatility.
Yeah.
But that means a little return too, so.
Yeah.
Do you, volatility is a price you pay for return. That's a trope from the old financial system.
Yeah. Do you guys leverage like puts or anything to manage that downside volatility?
Typically not. They're more time-based contracts. You kind of got to get the timing right. And then you've got things like derivative decay to worry about. But tactically, you could use it. Sometimes we'll use like structured ETF products that are using derivatives underneath the hood. So not very common, but sometimes you'll do what's called like a synthetic dollar position where you're up on your Bitcoin. You got a big chunk of Bitcoin. You don't want to sell it, but you can create a synthetic dollar by having like the opposite side. A short, you know, use a short ETF. And it's like, okay, I can kind of neutralize some of the volatility without locking in the gain of that larger Bitcoin position. So
that was a big BitMEX strategy for people back in the day that were on a Bitcoin standard and didn't want to stomach the volatility.
This episode was presented by River. River is the best, most secure place to buy Bitcoin in the United States. Go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account today. You'll be able to DCA into Bitcoin without paying any fees. You'll be able to give people Bitcoin via River links. You'll be able to send and receive Bitcoin over the Lightning Network. And you'll be able to set limit orders. If you want to buy Bitcoin at a particular price below or above where it is now, you can set orders to buy Bitcoin when it hits that price. Go to river.com/TFTC and set up your account today. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Unchained is building a financial services platform for a Bitcoin standard. They have over 7,000 clients that are securing over 90,000 Bitcoin with 12,000 keys on their platform. Their platform leverages Bitcoin's native multi-sig properties. Their cornerstone product is their vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig vault, which allows you to hold 2 of 3 keys in a multi-sig quorum. That gives you full control over your Bitcoin. They also have an IRA product, a lending desk, and their rolling out a bunch of other products, including Inheritance Protocol and Sound Advisory. So go to Unchained.com, set up a call with their concierge onboarding team today, tell them that TFTC sent you, and use the promo code TFTC at checkout. Unchained.com.
Yeah, let's talk about donor advised funds.
Sure.
You wrote a piece in Bitcoin Magazine last month. You guys just made a big announcement at Unchained yesterday, right?
Mm. So I worked pretty closely with Phil over at Unchained to get this off the ground. I saw features that Unchained was putting into their product, namely connections, where you can share a key with another vault owner. And then knowing the tools that exist in, you know, the legacy system, I was like, oh, all I got to do is organize a few players here and we've got a donor advised fund. So we could jump into what that might mean and look like for different clients and how you use that. But that was the backstories. Hey, Unchained's developing features that unlock certain things. So organized a few players and launched donor advised funds internally, guinea pigged myself, a few other folks, you know, guinea pigged themselves, and we just launched it, or Unchained made it more public that they're bringing that to the retail space.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before we get into the nitty gritty of the product itself, like, I think the broader conversation of tax planning for Bitcoiners who have all these gains and maybe want to be able to have a lower tax bill at the at end of the first quarter in April every year. Like, it's something that stresses me out, this tax strategy. I've lucky enough to work with the fine folks at Satoshi Pacioli. Yeah. Shout out to Joe
Great
Wood
guys.
And his team. They understand Bitcoin. They understand accounting. And so they bring peace of mind to me. But even with that backing, it still stresses me out.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a company, TFTC, that runs on a Bitcoin standard. We have a Bitcoin treasury. Some of our revenue is brought in via Bitcoin over the Bitcoin protocol. We've got bills to pay. We've got employees to pay. So we're not at the point yet where we're holding all the Bitcoin. We try to make sure our stack's increasing year on year, but there are times throughout the year we need to sell. And there's just always this feeling of stress at the end of the year when tax season comes around and like planning around reducing the tax bill as much as possible. And this is a way to do that.
Yeah, and oftentimes that stress comes because the year's already over, right? You're in April 25. You're like, I can't go back and do anything different in, you know, October of 24. So accounting is absolutely necessary, right? Getting your taxes right. Joe does a great job with his clients. We have mutual clients. Where we're a little bit different is we're often not like looking in the rearview mirror of what happened last year. We're looking 1, 5, 10 years down the road. Okay, what are the tax strategies coming up on the horizon? And DAFs are just, donor advised funds are a tool in that belt, right? Oh, we got X, Y, and Z in this case. Client's charitable. Maybe we need to look at doing a DAF and kind of front loading some gifting, choosing when we get our write-off for our tax situation. And then sometimes you're pairing that with other tools, right? So it, again, very specific case by case, but I'd say that's the major difference is a lot of CPAs are like, okay, what happened last year? Let's make the most of it. Good financial advice is looking 1, 5, 10 years down the road and be like, ooh, if we make this move, you're probably saving tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, just from a tax perspective. It's not like a matter of opinion. Doesn't matter if Bitcoin goes up or down or sideways, that there's just structural things within the tax code. And you say, oh, okay, this exists. You need to do this, this, and this. You've got a better situation. And oftentimes that's why people are signing up with us, because it's not a matter of opinion. Kind of just point to the numbers like, hey, we can save you X and we charge Y. It's pretty easy to say yes. So
let's walk through an example of this. Like, what does this look like? 1, 5, 10 year time horizon. What's an example of how you would prepare for that tax strategy?
Big one is retirement, and you'll have folks like, working, high tax bracket, 1 year, turn it off, right? Just drop to like super low tax bracket. And so when we're paying a high rate and you've got a low rate now, sometimes you're doing Roth conversions, taking money from an old pre-tax account, choosing to pay taxes early, get it into a Roth IRA account, and you're paying a lower rate on those taxes. So kind of, I like to point out to clients like a Nike swoosh, right? You're making a lot of money, went down in a dip, and then in your 70s, you hit this government requirement called a required minimum distribution. Kicks in around age 72, 73. But if a client has a very large pre-tax IRA, and some of ours have, you know, Bitcoin in them, right? And if Bitcoin does what people think and hope it could do over the next 10, 20 years, you're having to take that required distribution out of that pre-tax IRA. It starts at around 3 or 4%, but a lot of the scenarios we model, clients are likely approaching the highest tax bracket that exists. And so you take that opportune time while they're in the spoon, the dip of that Nike swoosh, like, hey, let's choose to pay some taxes now or this lower marginal rate, get it into Roth. And then that Bitcoin is going to sit tax-free for that client's life. That it can be inherited by the spouse tax-free and then kids as well. So that's a big one. That's where I've seen seven-figure tax savings.
Really? Okay,
if we're just looking at, you know, same to assume Bitcoin growth rate between whether it's in the pre-tax or Roth, but then you're just arbitraging the brackets there and making an opportune move when clients are at a low rate. So that's a big needle mover. Sometimes we're pairing a Roth conversion with a donor advised fund, right? As you're bringing those taxes from pre-tax to Roth, it's kind of increasing your tax bill. You're settling up with Uncle Sam, really, right? Hey, I've got this big IRA. I'm going to settle up with Uncle Sam. We'll move from pre-tax to Roth. That creates income. You can actually knock that income back down by doing some DAF work, right? Let's pre-fund our, you know, charitable giving for the future. So just tools in the belt, like knowing how the existing system works, what are the advantages and disadvantages of these tools, arbitraging brackets, and then using all that together with the client's goals in mind. It's kind of high level.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like.
But like, let's dig into the DAF, right? Like, so how? So the DAF, you basically pre-fund it, essentially.
Yeah, DAF is a tool where you can use it to size and time your charitable gifting. And so, sometimes you'll have a client doing that Roth conversion, or maybe they're selling their business and they've got a big tax bill. Right, I've got a huge gain coming at me this year, and I'm going to be pushed up into the highest bracket. This might be a good year if you're a giving person anyway. Hey, let's take a good chunk of that proceeds from the business sale, stick it into a donor advised fund so we get our write-off this year on it, right? And we can knock that tax bill down. Then it can stay in the donor advised fund and you can gift out of that over time. The funds will go to charity eventually, but you can choose to hodl it if you want Bitcoin, or hey, I want 10, 20, 30% to go to X, Y, and Z charities this year. And then within that fund, it's able to flip to dollars and you don't have to pay taxes on it. So oftentimes we'll see a client giving their lowest basis Bitcoin, the one they bought way back at $100 or $1,000, sitting at, let's call it 60 today. You're avoiding $59,000 of capital gain by not having to sell that Bitcoin. You just give it into the donor advised fund. So we use it as a strategy to increase a client's basis over time. That business owner who sells the business, maybe they're getting $1 million check, right? Sometimes they'll give $100,000 of Bitcoin into a donor advised fund and they'll buy the Bitcoin right back, $100,000, you know, with fresh higher basis. So I think a lot of folks enter like, oh, I'm just gonna buy Bitcoin, hold my own keys. It's that simple, right? I would say the average client, they come in the door already doing that. We are not orange pilling them. They're already pilled. And we're saying, hey, we might need to do the tax pill, right? Here's some things that you might not know about. You know, maybe we can jump rope, you know, play some bracket arbitrage, or you've got X, Y, and Z happening in your life. Like, how do we make the most of it? I think those are examples of forward-looking tax strategy.
Yeah. Taxes, man. Why can't we just make money, save it, and
job security?
Not have to worry about all this.
I don't think they're going away anytime soon. I have a thesis that it's the final friction. Once Bitcoin taxes are easy, we're there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not property. It's not gain. It's money. I've heard different Bitcoin heads like, Bitcoin's money. Yes, technically it's trying to be money, but the IRS doesn't see it as money. No. They see it as, it's more sailor-esque, right? It's property.
Yeah.
Quick break here, freaks. This rip is brought to you by Gradually Then Suddenly, a framework for understanding Bitcoin as money by Parker Lewis. I wrote the foreword to the book. I'm honored to have done so because it's the best 0-to-1 primer if you're looking for a logical explanation of why Bitcoin obsoletes all other money. Buy one for yourself and maybe a few for your friends. Go to thesafehouse.com/gradually. That's thesafehouse.com, safe spelled S-A-I-F, thesafehouse.com/gradually. Use the promo code TFTC for $5 off at checkout. Buy it now, freaks. The price of Bitcoin is going up. You need to understand it. This is the best 0-to-1 primer. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off.
How would Trump's proposed tax plan, like increased tariffs, crash the income tax, affect any of this planning at all?
It could be difficult to get through. I mean, you do see pretty significant changes every 5 to 8 years to the tax code. There's a big sunset coming from his last TCJA bill. So Trump passed that one when he was in office. And because of Congress needing to agree, it had a sunset. And so 2025 is the last year of that bill. We'll see. I mean, if he gets in there and is able to take some components that his constituents like from that bill and keep them going for, you know, maybe another 7-10 years. I think the tariffs are a little more internationally and macroeconomically focused. I don't think you'll see, at least my clients, we don't have to engage with that in any sort of planning sense other than it might affect prices. Mm-hmm. You know, you see different prices as supply chains are kind of disrupted through that.
Yeah.
You know, you might have volatility within up or down, right? So yeah, maybe brace for impact with your spending levels a little bit. Like, hey, if you shake something up that big, right, and his plan, get rid of income tax, like that's huge source of revenue for the government. So they're just going to have to print more if they can't replace that with tariffs.
Yeah. Well, that's the, they're either going to have to print more or they're going to have to completely gut the administrative state and just go around like Department of Education gone, Department of Energy gone, war spending.
Yeah.
Cut by 75%.
And his, the other side would view that and frame that as like, look, he is destroying the democracy, right? Those things that may be necessary for long-term sustainability and a balanced budget, it is going to look like he's being Malay chainsaw ruthless, right?
God, I've seen what you've done for other people, and I want that for myself. Come in, just kick them all out. So the DAF, you guys have partner organizations like HRF, OpenSats, a bunch of others that were announced.
A DAF, you can use a DAF and it can go to any 501c3. So the particular DAF sponsor that Sound Advisor uses and the one that got implemented at the Unchained level, they're called UI Charitable Advisors. They are a charitable entity and it's a donor advised fund. So the donor advises how those funds will be ultimately used. Are they going to be invested or will they be granted to a final 501c3? So Unchained compiled a list of Bitcoin friendly final charities, right? OpenSats, HRF, Brink. It's not limited to those though. The most common top three in America are church, school, hospital, or kind of medical, you know, things like cancer research, St. Jude's, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it can go to all those, and we'll see clients using it in all ways. One of the more fun ones I've gotten into was a client who was a Ethereum holder up on the Ethereum, no longer believes in it, wants to turn it into Bitcoin, doesn't want to pay taxes though, because he's got a gain. We're using that Ethereum, going to be gifting it to the donor advised fund, no taxes. That Ethereum can then be cleaned up, upgraded, changed into Bitcoin in kind on chain. And now that client gets to hold Bitcoin and chooses when to, this particular client, it's wells in Africa are his cause. So, hey, I want to carve off 50K and I want to send that to this Wells in Africa project. So there's just interesting, cool use cases. Like, hey, here's a DAF, you know, sounds boring, interesting start, but start to finish, we are now like cleaning up this client's Ethereum, not paying any taxes, and he's turning it into causes he cares about.
Yeah. And so there's a good way to look at this is for an individual is like, I don't want to give my money to the government. I have some causes that like I would like to directly fund instead of giving this money to what I deem to be an inefficient and wasteful government. And it's essentially like you're lowering your tax burden, but at the same time, using that money that would have been spent on those taxes for causes that you believe in.
Sure. Yeah. You see Bitcoiners light up when they finally get it. They're like, oh, okay. That's like, I got to fix the money part. Like I'm a Bitcoiner, right? I get that now. Like I do care about fixing the world and I don't want to have the government be doing that. They're not good at it. They just create wars. And like, I think I can do a little better with spending. Right. And then I've got my list of 1, 3, 5, 10 charities I care about. I don't have to worry about how do I get Bitcoin to all that? How do I orange pill this hospital, that church, this school? You just put it into the DAF, you can keep it as Bitcoin. And if that charitable entity is not ready for Bitcoin yet, you flip it to dollars, send them a check. It's business as usual for them. You can just put it in the memo field. This came from a Bitcoin DAF, you know, if you want to. But yeah, it's a cool tool. I'm glad it exists. And then my job, which makes it really fun, is like, okay, it's just a tool when we're trying to build a house. Like, how do I combine that with other tools, right? Okay, DAF, Roth conversion, brackets, business selling, and it makes it fun. Like, the job is never boring.
No, and this is how stuff used to be funded, right? It was charity, like, before the income tax and this bloated federal government that is taking large swaths of your hard-earned money year in and year out. And they make the argument like, oh no, we need the federal government, we need taxes to make sure that things get funded. But historically and arguably, back before the income tax, like the Renaissance, the American Renaissance in the late 1800s, like a lot of the beauty that was built, parks, monuments, libraries, buildings, hospitals, churches, whatever it may be, it was funded by charitable giving.
Yeah, there aren't too many charitable wars started. I have over a dozen California clients, and sometimes they can have a 10% state on top of a 50% federal. So 60 cents of every new dollar they're earning is going to taxes, the federal government in California. And that is immensely frustrating when you're like, why is over half of that next dollar that I make going to these things that are not supporting the world I want to see being built? So DAFs were a pet project. I wanted to see that tool in Bitcoiners' hands, right? And so they did exist in non on-chain ways, but knowing what I knew from the team at Unchained, it's like, hey, let's do this. You know, you could put a key in the DAF donors' hands, key with UI Charitable, and a key with Unchained. Now you've got on-chain DAF, and people can keep Bitcoin in there growing for the causes they care about. And you're really just using that structure to size and time when you want your write-off.
Yeah. And talking about like tax planning, like how do these conversations with your clients materialize? Is you have like a beginning of the year meeting, like, all right, what do you think your income is going to be? Here's the tax code and the changes that have happened from last year to this year. And do you plan that in the beginning of the year, or Is it
so like we meet quarterly with our clients from a financial perspective, and then they go over quarterly to Unchained as well. They meet with David on that team to work on key control, operational security concepts. So it's usually 8 meetings a year. They're going back and forth between. Because if we create, say, like an inheritance plan or a trust, right? Bitcoin doesn't know about trusts or inheritance. Like, it knows about private keys. And so that technical component over at Unchained is crucial. So we always line up the financial with the technical. I meet with our clients half the year. David meets the other half. And then they bounce back and forth. And then we're bringing up topics in a season where it makes sense, right? So we have a rough, it's not cookie cutter, but like a rough framework for like, hey, typically we're addressing an estate and inheritance Q3. That's what, you know, we're in this quarter. But Q4, we'll be moving into tax projection season. So, hey, what's happened so far this year? What did markets do? You traded this, this, and this. Getting into that client's basis file. Okay, which coins do we want to choose that we sold? And then just kind of doing an end of the year, hey, do we got any year end moves to make, right? Markets could be volatile around election time. Just want to have a plan going into that quarter and then execute on it by December. Then we have a CPA on staff as well. So when we get into next spring and it's CPA season, we've all made all the best moves we could in 2024. He can dig into that. Taxes are pretty streamlined in the spring. So yeah, it's kind of an efficient calendar, just keeping people on track, what they need to know about and decide when, and then we just meet regularly to make sure it's happening for them.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest mistakes that people make?
Oh, geez. And I think more often than not, most people have made this one, is you get into Bitcoin, and I think the, we'll just call it like the altcoin season and the cost basis implications, like it can get pretty messy, you know? Yeah. Myself, when I was learning, I took a very classic financial advisor approach. Like, oh, I'm going to diversify and buy the top 5 coins, right? Because I don't know. I'm just getting exposure. And then you go back and I look at that in the cost basis file. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, those end up in my situation. Those are the ones I've donated to the DAF, right? Like, clean that up. It doesn't matter, you know, the gains associated. So I would say cost basis and tracking, and the rules weren't very clear when a lot of people were first buying, and exchanges have collapsed. So having a good understanding of where things are at from a tax like foundation, get into that, dig into that, because then you can build upon that, right? It doesn't matter if you've got 5-10 coins you can't track down. Those might be the 5-10 that you're giving to charitable causes, and you're like, oh, there's a peace of mind with like, great, you know, I don't have to go back and dig up that basis, and I don't have to pay all the tax. Like, it's 100% gain. So that's a big one on the tax side. And then I'd say on the estate and inheritance side, is it's usually a husband 8 out of 10 times, right?
Yeah.
They're the single point of failure. Their mind, their map, how all the Bitcoin works. And they believe in Bitcoin, but that spouse, that wife's like, I don't really know as much. I believe in my husband, right? I believe in the believer, but I'm not technically as savvy or competent. And they're the real risk, right? Or they're just looking at their inheritance plan. Like, I've got the keys, my wife knows where it's at, and there's not good like legal title, structuring processes, you know, wills, trusts behind that to support that. No, those coins now actually do belong to the wife. We'll see a lot of gaps and planning opportunities there. So well-rounded estate plan and then good tax planning, because they're, again, not really a matter of opinion. We don't have to be right about Bitcoin's direction or price or anything like that. You're just getting the blocking and tackling of financial planning done.
Yeah. So much that goes into this. And when you think about like Bitcoiners specifically, like a lot of Bitcoiners, not everyone, we're like cutting edge, just like risk takers, younger millennials who myself included just aped in and weren't as financially savvy or didn't have the concept of financial planning behind them when they got into it. And
yeah, and you were so right about that, right?
Yeah.
And it can create a bias towards there's nothing valuable in the old system. And I saw that. I was like, oh, there's still things that we want to go back there and grab, right?
What are examples of that?
Retirement accounts. I'd say a young Bitcoiner is like, why do I need a Roth IRA? You know, doesn't matter if you've been building into IRAs for 20 or 30 years and you're going to be half of it's taxed and another 10% penalty and you live in California. So you're looking at like 60, 70% if you're a high income earner. Like you can have 60 to 70% more Bitcoin if you use an IRA structure. Right. And if you've got the cynical down with the man, like I don't touch the, I'm no KYC to the core. You can be cynical of that, but that absolutely matters to that retiree. He's retiring in 2 or 3 years. All of his money's in a 401k or IRA, and he's looking at like, how do I get more Bitcoin? He will get more Bitcoin by using some existing structures rather than just like, let me ape out of the TradFi system, pay 70% tax, and now I have like 30% of the Bitcoin. Like,
yeah, how does somebody who has historically held that thought and may listen to this, be like, oh, maybe I should do this. Like,
oh,
how do they go about doing it? Like, they had the realization, like, I want to keep 60% of the Bitcoin that I could lose for not doing this. Is that still possible?
So let me clarify. You're asking about what type of scenario? The
young millennial is like, screw the system. I'm just going to stack Bitcoin and not think about these tax structures. And they're still holding their stack.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have time to be like, all right, I'm going to make a wiser decision, roll it into these things and not have to eat
all those taxes? You might not roll that in. It depends, right? And so just knowing the tools that are available doesn't mean they're going to apply to every situation. It's not like everyone's coming in the door like, hey, we're slapping them, you know, we need IRAs and all this stuff. You just take them for where they're at. And maybe if they are like early Bitcoiner, never used a retirement structure, you lean more into the tax planning around getting into the basis and what would be the implications if you sold versus do we take a loan against it? That market's developing, right? It's becoming hopefully more and more mature. Mm-hmm. And so a sell versus loan analysis, like you might use a different set of tools and approach, but I think the larger point what we're zooming back to is like not everything about the existing system doesn't apply to Bitcoiners, right?
Yeah.
Loans are a perfect example. That is a concept of, you know, the existing system. Bitcoiners look at that like, oh, I'm going to do USD, you know. It's a tax rule, basically, is what makes that efficient, is you don't have to pay taxes on loan distribution proceeds.
Yeah. So. It's a beautiful product that Unchained offers as well.
Yeah.
That's what we need to, because I mean, we talk a lot about it at 1031. When you look at like the Unchained lending desk, yes, the rates are high, but if you look,
they survive.
They're very high, but that's because there's like this asymmetry of information, particularly within credit markets, where if you actually look at how the loan is collateralized, the custody of the collateral, and mm-hmm. the LTV, like it's nothing's risk free, but it's one of the lowest risk sort of mm-hmm. like loan vehicles that exist out there.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it should come with like a lower cost of capital over time as more people.
And I think it will when they understand that. The trouble is, if you've got a lot of money and you understand that Bitcoin's good collateral, you almost just rather buy Bitcoin. Like, why do I want to fund loans and get a net, you know, 11-12% fixed rate of return? Yeah, it can happen. It does belong in, you know, certain scenarios.
I hear that all the time, but it's also like there are these dedicated credit funds that like don't have mandates. Like they can't buy spot Bitcoin. Like they're forced to allocate towards credit products.
And yes,
like if you are one of those pools of capital, like
and if we're trapped in fixed income, like how do we get the best fixed income? I see that case, but often I'm sitting with an end client who gets to decide, like, do I want fixed income?
Yeah.
Usually not. That's usually like the Bitcoiner's first thing to go.
I'm not thinking of individual Bitcoiners, but like you talk about like these pension funds, these large institutions that have sort of portfolio slivers that they need to allocate capital out of. And mm-hmm. they have a mandate for each sliver, which is like, this can only go towards fixed income. This can only go towards public equities. Yeah. This can go towards private equity. Like for those pools of capital, it's like, why wouldn't you?
And it's the fixed income manager who gets Bitcoin that is just trapped. You see Saylor arbitraging that. Hey, convertible debt. There you go. Like, he knows there's a big pool of capital that almost every issue does oversubscribed.
I mean, One today that just came out, like, oh, another one today. Issued 750 million and oversubscribed to $1.05 billion.
Gonna put it into some yield.
Yeah. Be careful, Michael. Careful.
It's never turned out badly for anyone.
No.
Basically risk free.
Basically risk free. Ralph Paul said so. All right. I told you this.
Okay.
When you came in here. You're the first.
Ready.
You're the first of a new segment that we're starting here.
Seat's getting hot.
At TFTC. We're ending it with a question, which is looking ahead, what's a bold prediction or idea you have for your industry, our industry, that most people would disagree with right now?
Bold prediction for my industry.
Bold prediction.
Bold, not bull. Not bold. Bear. Okay.
Just a bold prediction.
Good clarifying.
Or a thought bold. That you have that
a bold
most people would disagree with.
Hmm. Bold prediction for the industry. I don't think volatility goes away. I think we have cycles. The cycles are big, maybe bigger. If you see nation states get rugged or Coinbase honeypots get seized or companies with 1% of the Bitcoin, you know, put it up for yield and get rugged by JP Morgan. Like, those are huge. The dominoes are getting bigger, right? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to me that's proven that the volatility has gone away. And so here's where the bold prediction comes in for the individual, is that sometimes you might be more stable by not being like all in on Bitcoin, right? And being able to, hey, maybe I want a year or two of cash to just ride out a cycle and not have to sell Bitcoin if it goes back down. So downside protection probably makes me sound like a bear sometimes, but I sit with a lot of clients who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s. They love Bitcoin. They get so frustrated when I'm like, hey, you should probably sell some. You're like 90% plus of your life. And, you know, I don't want to see the 80% down for you, right? Just modeling that for them. And so trying to stay humble. They've done such a great job stacking sats, right? And I'm like, oh, I don't want, but we are just not hyper Bitcoinized yet, right? You can't take it down the street to the grocery store and be successful with getting a sandwich with it. Like, it's just, the dollar's still present and the dollar's huge, and it'll be an interesting unwind. And I don't know if it happens fast or slow, but I think it happens with volatility. Mm-hmm. So protect yourselves. Maybe sell Bitcoin, which is heresy, I know, but I've seen it and recommended it to people because I think they'll be safer and probably have more Bitcoin for themselves, their spouse, or their kids by not having to sell if we dip again in a year, two, or three.
So your bold prediction is we're gonna have a massive rug that creates
that's the risk. And so part of being the financial planner is like, let's identify as many pits as we can and try not to fall into them. And so, yeah, I see ETFs as a 6102 away, a matter of national security, whatever administration decides, you know, agnostic to that side of things. But hey, we need Bitcoin. Let's go ahead and these ETFs, they'll print the money, you know, make ETF holders whole, quote unquote. But I see that as a huge honeypot, Coinbase specifically running the majority of those ETF funds.
Do you think, I mean, multi-institution, multi-sig, Unchained's enterprise offering, like, do you think that needs to be the standard? To
I would love to see a ticker symbol MSIG ETF, right? Mm-hmm. I would really like that, where you've got multiple entities securing an ETF's coins. That would be a better version of an ETF, but ETFs are still Wall Street's layer two.
Yeah.
Right. They got into the game and they came in like right at layer two. And you know, I know it's a rough analogy, but that's kind of how they're operating. Is you could transfer ETF shares from brokerage account to brokerage account, and all that basis information would actually come with it too. Not an on-chain footprint, but it kind of gets the job done of transferring value in a layer two kind of Wall Street sense. So they're gaining popularity. There's far more Bitcoin in ETFs than there are in the Lightning Network. Mm-hmm. And they're here. They're a contender. Bitcoin does a great job of aligning incentives. So, you know, flows are coming in, but they haven't proven themselves to be on like the, in my opinion, respecters of custody and keys yet. And just seeing, I get emails from Coinbase all the time. Yeah, XYZ garbage token is a top mover today. It's like, you guys are lost on what really matters here, yeah. In my opinion. You know, this is financial advice, Coinbase, like start focusing on Bitcoin and getting that right and protecting your customers, and you'll be better off for it.
Coinbase is the most disappointing story of Bitcoin's early two-decade history. Not 2 decades yet, but 1.5 decades in our second decade. All the opportunity in the world. I mean, launched. And
they still have it.
They still have it. But if you think of launching in late 2012, early 2013, whenever they launched, and the fact that they only have like 2,000 Bitcoin on their balance sheet, like they should have way more Bitcoin than MicroStrategy. The politicization that they've expressed, particularly around the fork wars in 2017, like basically trying to pick which fork was the quote unquote actual Bitcoin. And then, like, as you mentioned, the lack of focus on the most important asset in this industry, which is Bitcoin, and the over-indexing on all these shit coins, essentially becoming a casino to get those revenues. I'm sure those revenues are good, but I think they'll be ephemeral in the long term. Which is another question, like, do you think the altcoin cycles continue, or do you think the market, particularly with the ETFs, if you look at the Bitcoin ETF flows versus the ETH ETF flows, for example, like, they're non-comparable, essentially.
I don't know if I would have a prediction about any specific coin, but as long as altcoins do exist, they're kind of like leeches on Bitcoin's success, right? If Bitcoin's having a cycle, like, I don't see them breaking a correlation from that cycle. I can't imagine Bitcoin down 80% certain altcoin, unless you're looking at a stable coin.
Well, that's why the ETFs are particularly interesting, because historically, the broader crypto market has benefited because the inflows into altcoins, where you'd get on an exchange like Coinbase, Binance, Bittrex, Poloniex back in the day, and you'd fund your account with Bitcoin, and then you'd go and trade into the altcoins. But now with the ETFs, which are taking insane amount of inflows, like, that's basically like a one stop. It's not like you get into the BlackRock ETF and then you diversify into
Solana
or whatever. Yeah. Like, that flow of capital into the broader crypto space is way different now, and most of the flows are coming into the ETFs, and there's no possible way that they're going to flow into crypto. So that's one thing I question heading into this next cycle, is like, will it be as pronounced as in the past because of the dynamics of, you know, the pure flows of money into this market are different. But then number two, like, people will say, like, even on these altcoin exchanges now, it's really not flowing through Bitcoin. It's flowing through stable coins. People load it up and with a stable coin or something, and then use those stable coins to buy the crypto. So I guess that is.
And the stable coin success is showing you that the dollar's not done. People probably largely overseas need that exposure. And so they're willing to, it's like a money market fund with yield stripped away so it can ride on crypto rails. Right. Yeah. But people are like, well, I know I don't get the 5%. I'm fine letting Tether keep that, but I need dollar exposure because my currency is even worse than the dollar.
Yeah.
So, in a way, they're using things like stable coins to balance their own volatility.
Is Tether the most successful company in the world right now?
Maybe per capita. I saw the
profitability. Definitely per capita. Like,
that is wild. It'll be interesting how they can keep it up if we are in a rate down cycle, right? Because so many treasuries were purchased, you know, they were floating at 5% for a while, but if you go back down to lower rates, they can be able to keep that. At least the yield on the treasuries should decline with that. And heard them say that they are on the shorter end of that curve, which is wise, but then also hedging the rate cut with the Bitcoin that they hold. And it's like, oh, they could, you know, that would likely squirt up when you get the rate cuts. So it'll be interesting to see them juggle the cycle, right?
Yeah.
The rate cutting cycle.
No, I was talking to Preston Pish last month or the month before. He's convinced that like the 2 year is going to go to 7%. Like
2 year to seven?
Even with like rate cuts, because
that'll allow that. They'll buy that down.
You think so?
Oh yeah. Fire it up. Yeah. They've been money vacuum for,
which that's like,
yeah, money printer.
Like you just mentioned, back. Tether's perfectly hedged if that happens. Like if, mm-hmm. if they have to, if for some reason they lose control of the yield curve and
yeah.
the front end floats up to 7% and they have to print a bunch of money yeah. to push it down, like Bitcoin's going to mm-hmm. benefit from that. So like,
yeah. yeah. We'll see with a lot of clients where it's just a very barbelled strategy, right? They're so concentrated on Bitcoin and they're like, oh, is this too much? What's the natural opposite to Bitcoin? It's the dollar, right? It is the currency of today. Bitcoin's hopefully that store of value money for the long term in the future. But if you're looking to like, you know, have a little more balance, like you don't be totally loaded up on one side of the barbell. So yeah, cash is still a necessary evil for yeah. a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. Cash is king. Still is, whether you
down with the king,
like to admit it or not.
Yeah. Come at the king, you best not miss. Bitcoin's got a shot.
You think it's got a shot?
Absolutely. I wouldn't have. Yeah, I'm probably the worst person to ask because I'm going down with the ship at this point, right? Like moving career, clients, a lot of my time and energy. Like I am focused on this being a tool to better the world. Yeah. It's not just money or an investment or savings or this, you know, makes people wealthier. It does. But what are the downstream effects of that? I think it makes the world a better place. And that's what I want to see. So I appreciate my job where I get to work with the best, you know, Bitcoiners who are taking it seriously in the world and then make them more efficient at doing that. Just yeah. kind of unlocking things like taxes, protecting their heirs and spouses and kids, and just really creating like long-term generational wealth with a plan and a strategy and educating and really supporting that. I'm probably the worst person to ask, like, is Bitcoin going to succeed? Like, I'm so biased at this point. So,
yeah. And I think the probability of its success is only going up. And now, like, I know that was supposed to be the last question of the episode, but now I've got like more questions yeah. floating around my head, particularly like client facing, like, have you encountered, I mean, obviously Sound Advisory is catered towards Bitcoiners, but like, do you have any anecdotes from clients that were maybe a little bit skeptical of Bitcoin, but put it into their oh, portfolio sure. yeah. and were surprised and are now mm-hmm. hardened believers?
It increases. So I've got people at all different points of the journey. I have a client who bought their, and we did use the ETF. They just aren't ready for key control structures at this time. So like, hey, let's just have a little bit, you know, we'll put it in your Roth IRA. And then I know that in the future, if she becomes a believer and like, hey, this Bitcoin thing, you put it in there, it's working. Yeah, let's talk about that. We can do a rollover to a better key control structure with no tax consequences. So sometimes I'm ahead of like where this client's going to be in 5-10 years, if I'm right. But I don't think pushing people into the deep end, right? They've got to like get there themselves, and you can't fake or copy and paste education onto someone, right? Mm. It is proof of work, and that's what creates a hodler. They know what they have. They've done the work. They're educated. And so that's what I try to do, is just like, hey, you might be on step one, or you might be your 10,000 hours in, would still deepen the education, right? If you know more about Bitcoin or tax strategies or estate planning, you know, techniques, like you're just going to become that much more capable in using Bitcoin's power and promise, like to better the world and accomplish your goals. So
yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
thank you for doing what you do. It's important. Yeah. I think you see more RIAs like coming to this market, because it seems like you are one of the few dedicated RIAs to clients who are focused on Bitcoin and need a competent advisor who understands Bitcoin and their needs and how to manage everything, whether it be tax strategy, estate planning, whatever it may be. Like, what would you say to any RIA out there who's looking to like create an opportunity for themselves? Like, is there a big opportunity to cater to Bitcoin clients?
And we're growing really fast, and I can't serve 10,000 clients, right? I probably max out around you know, 50 to 100, depending on how complex those cases are. So I'd say to those RIAs, talk to me. If you're interested in Bitcoin, we're looking at the long term. Hey, if this is around for 10, 20 years and you're a young, hungry advisor who understands Bitcoin and what's valuable about the existing system, that overlap, as soon as we jumped into it, it was just open season, right? No one's sitting in the space for what's good about the old financial system and how does that make Bitcoiners' lives better? And then you just navigate that for clients. And so I think long-term, that's absolutely coming. I hope that advisors don't settle for 2-3% in an ETF balanced portfolio. Like, I think you're missing what will happen with Bitcoin over the long term. That,
and if you do, and your clients could get pissed at you, right?
Yeah, if you keep rebalancing them back down to 3%,
yeah,
they might book an intro with us. So, yeah, learn.
And if they wanted to, where could they do that?
Just go to the website. We're at thesoundadvisory.com. There's a book an intro button. So, small but mighty team of three. We got two certified financial planners like myself, and then one CPA on staff, and growing steadily. Just crossed 150 million under advisement. So that does include Bitcoin. We're about 100 million-ish of Bitcoin that we help with, and maybe about 50 million in traditional securities. So it definitely leans Bitcoiner in that sense.
That's the beauty of Bitcoin for you too. If we double from here, you got 250 million under management.
Yeah. we don't take AUM fees on Bitcoin. I mean, kind of helps with notoriety and like, hey, look, the things we're doing, you know, a lot of our clients doubled their net worth. Like, that's great. But the proof of work still exists with, we need to be serving our clients every quarter. They can always cancel 30 days notice. And so we're not interested in holding any hostages. Like, they need to be getting value every quarter from our team. And that's what will keep us in the game long-term. So
yeah. Get on it, freaks. Hit up Jesse, Sound Advisory. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. That's all we got today, freaks. Peace and love.